So how do we know a good idea is really a good idea for First Nations children and families? Or that that good idea actually works in the diverse and distinct First Nations communities all over this country? Let's dig a little deeper and chat with experts in the field of child well-being about what the evidence says, what are some of the myths, and what works when it comes to supporting First Nations children, young people, and their families. You're listening to Season 2 of Spirit Bearers Ask an Expert podcast. Hello, everyone. I'm Cindy Blackstock, and I am the Executive Director of the Caring Society, and I'm joined here by our always famous Spirit Bear for this edition of Spirit Bear's podcast, Ask the Expert. And I am so excited for today's special guest because we've been talking about prevention in child and family services. But what does that actually mean? And what are people doing in community to actually ensure children's safety and family safety? Not just kind of cosmetically reducing the numbers of children in care, but getting in there and really addressing some of the concerns in families so that they can grow children who are healthy and proud. Today, we are joined by Laurence Allard, who is a valued team member of the First Nations of Quebec and Labrador Health and Social Services Council. If you've never heard of them, go on to their website in both French and English. They do a lot of amazing work. Your background is, man, you've been doing a lot of stuff in terms of your education. You've got a couple of bachelor's degrees, and you also have a degree in law. So you're very multidisciplinary. And you've been working on integrating Aboriginal legal traditions into federal legal institutions. So how timely is that knowledge when we're all struggling with how to land this self-determination in First Nations child welfare? We are absolutely delighted to have you today. Thank you for joining us, Laurence. Is there something that you would like to say in terms of introducing yourself that I've missed?
Thank you for having me. I think you've made a good introduction. I'm just happy to be here and to be able to speak for the commission.
Okay, great. And so for folks across the country, because we'll have folks across Canada, but also internationally who listen to the podcast, this may be the first time that they've heard about the commission, and that's where we make it short because it's quite a long acronym, right? The First Nations of Quebec and Labrador Health and Social Services Council. So we'll call it the commission for right now.
Exactly.
So can you tell us a little bit about the commission, the work it does?
The commission was created by the Chiefs of Assembly of First Nations Quebec and Labrador in 1994. It was the result of numerous discussions that highlighted the need to create an effective connection to defend the interests of First Nations and support their priorities with everything that had to do with health and social services. So the commission's mission is to support First Nation in Quebec and Labrador to achieve goals in the terms of health, well-being, culture, self-determination. And the main areas of intervention are very wide. We go from everything related to governance, early childhood, health, social services, social development. We have research team, and we also have an informational resources that we constantly update and create.
Wow, great. And I love the interdisciplinary focus of the commission. Mm-hmm. Just like your background, it really prepares us to deal with a lot of the challenges that community members are facing, which are by their nature interdisciplinary. Colonialism didn't just constrain itself to one particular area, it's broad sweeping. So taking a more holistic approach just makes all kinds of sense. And I can just say for myself that I found the commission's contribution and guidance over the years really valuable for our national work as well. So I want to thank you for that. One of the things that's also unique about Quebec is the way that child and family services is actually delivered to community members. Can you share with us a little bit about how it's structured in Quebec?
Yeah, so each community in Quebec has the right to offer their own services. So the community can set up their own child and family services and frontline prevention services. Therefore, they can consult with the communities themselves and establish directly what the needs of the communities are. And then that helps them guide to create action plans in order to offer their services. So it's especially needs-based. And since every community is very different and from very different locations, it allows them to have services that really match their reality and their needs.
And one of the things that we heard a lot about during the tribunal case, which our listeners have heard about before, this national litigation against Canada to ensure funding for First Nations communities in Quebec, but also across the country, is that having those resources to implement those community-based solutions is really, really critical. And we've come a long way with the tribunal, but we still have some more work to do to make sure that becomes a reality.
Definitely.
So this episode is called Going from Zero to 60 in Prevention Services, because literally before the tribunal, a lot of communities had no money for prevention. Like, we all know the long history of children being separated from their families due to residential schools, other colonial activities, the 60s scoop, and then this dramatic underfunding of critical services for children and families, including in child and family services, led us to a point where there were more children in care nationally than the First Nations children than there was at the height of residential school. But now, with the progress we've collectively made in our work before the tribunal, some communities are getting the money, but this might be new to them, right?
Yeah.
So this is why having you a part of this conversation is so valuable. So can you talk about what you consider to be prevention services? What are you trying to prevent? How do you ensure that First Nations children, youth, and families can thrive in culturally based ways?
So if we take the broad aspect, preventive services are mainly designed to help families keep their children in natural environments. So we want to keep them within the community, we want to keep them in their culture. It's to promote safety, permanency, and the well-being of like all child families and the community as a whole. If we go more specifically with First Nation communities, the preventive services are designed to support the parents, the youth, and the families and the communities by offering services that are based on culturally sensitive practices. And the emphasis really has to be placed on developed by and for First Nations. So currently, as I mentioned, all non-treaty communities in Quebec offer prevention services to their population under funding with Indigenous Services Canada. And the communities all share the common desire to improve like the living conditions and the well-being of the families. And in order to do so, like I mentioned earlier, they use action plans, which result from consultation directly with community members. And those are done, I think, every 5 years. And it makes it possible to take note of what already exists in the community, the social reality, the strengths, things that have evolved. And then we can determine what is really needed to help the children, youth, and families thrive.
So if I'm a community in another area of the country and I think, well, this sounds important for me to do too in my nation, is there anything in kind of in writing or someone they could speak to at the commission? Could they reach out to the commission and say, I'd like to know more on how to do these types of consultations in community on prevention?
Yeah, definitely. Our research department always helps with the community consultations. They can come and give different workshops on how to do consultations, but they can also help with the process itself.
Yeah. And you know, what you're touching on there is so important in terms of how to target the prevention services, right? Because for our listeners, you might hear child welfare jargon. I try to stay away from it, but as much as I can, but there's something called primary prevention. That's more public health. Secondary prevention is for families who are, you know, likely at risk and of getting in contact with child welfare. And then we have tertiary prevention, which is families who are struggling. They may, in fact, have children in care or about to have children placed in alternative care. And secondary and tertiary tend to be statutory services. So they have to be delivered in a certain way. Prevention, there's a bit more of a broad stream. So we always need to be sure what you're talking about is what are the actual needs of people? And how do we make sure these things are all coordinated, right?
Yep.
No matter what your needs are, like today I might need primary prevention in my family, but tomorrow we have a crisis and I'm now really having a difficult time. That there's seamless kinds of things. So what kinds of efforts are there in these community plans on ensuring coordination of services?
There's a lot of importance placed on service continuum. If we look between different sectors, the fact like at the commission that we can do multiple sectors, we kind of help coordinate in the communities themselves to do similar. When we look at certain aspects, we help them integrate different sectors into what they're doing. So let's say if we're touching child and family services, let's be honest, child and family services is not just one thing. It's going to include early childhood. It is a part of governance also. It's a part of health. So it's teaching the communities to really be open with one another, kind of getting out of those silos that we're so used to with Western culture, and to make sure that the way the community evolves is reflected in their services.
Yeah, I think this interdisciplinary thing is so important, right? Because children's lives aren't just cut up in child welfare and then education and health. And if you really approach it from a child in a family and in a community context, then you find ways of working with one another to the shared goal of the betterment of that child. Mm-hmm. And we know from the Canadian Incident Study, the First Nations part of it, it's called the full line is the Canadian Incident Study of Child Abuse and Neglect. It's called the CIS for short. If you hear us using that lingo, that's what that means. But that's a study that looks at all children who come into contact with the child welfare system, from the point of the referral to child welfare to the point that someone does something with the case. So that might be the child goes into care or the child family gets kinds of supports. We know that one of the main reasons that First Nations children go into child welfare care is something called neglect. Now, I've been doing child welfare for 40 years, and I have often struggled with that definition because neglect kind of, for me, means that the parents have the ability to change the risk to the child and that they have the resources and they're just choosing not to do it. And that's the way child welfare statutes work, is that it's really you as the parent who are responsible for getting rid of the risk. But what if that risk is beyond your ability to control? Say you're in a community without water, for example, or you don't have access to broadband so your kid can learn online. What do you do about those situations? So I wanted to see what you think about the term neglect and how do we make sure that prevention services deal with those things that families do have responsibilities to change, but also these bigger issues.
In 2022, the commission actually published a report entitled Better Understanding the Phenomenon of Child Neglect in the Context of First Nations in Quebec. So the commission really did an entire research project specifically on neglect in Quebec. And the research highlighted the cultural differences in approaches to raising children and youth protection. And it revealed that there's a paradigm shift that non-Indigenous people need to make in order to really understand how First Nation in Quebec define child neglect. There's a consensus amongst First Nation in Quebec that parents aren't willfully neglectful of their children, like you mentioned. It's the different problems that they experience for which they don't necessarily receive help, be it because they don't talk about it, they don't seek services, they don't have access to them, that make it that they're no longer able to meet their children's basic needs. These different issues that First Nations face are often assessed in a way that ignores everything that is outside of that context, which can't be done. We can't assess it in isolation, choosing our specific time frame and overall context of historically what has happened with First Nations communities. If we look traditionally, First Nation parenting allowed children to develop like self-discipline and responsibility on their own. Children were allowed to explore, be independent, and like elders would pass on their teaching by observation. It was little oral explanation, and adults only intervened when there was actual danger. So as a result, children's learning style was observational. They would imitate their elders and intuitively and without much questioning. So it's a learning style that is still very widespread amongst communities and is often very misunderstood by non-First Nation caregivers. And if we look at the protective factors for child neglect, research findings highlight the importance of really addressing the impact of colonialism in intervention approaches and practices. So particularly with the respect of intergenerational trauma related to residential schools, as well as the importance of having the extended families of these children share responsibility for their needs. So we're going back to like more traditional and cultural roles of who takes care of the children. And one way of offering culturally safe services, it means that they have to be robust and they have to be diversified and in a way integrate traditional healing methods. It's been determined that culture and traditional practices in the form of transmission of knowledge, ceremonies, as well as the frequentation and appreciation of the territory, especially, has a positive effect on the well-being of First Nation, and it can be seen as protective factors against child neglect. So the territory is seen as a place of education, of socialization, of healing. It serves as a reference point for transmission of knowledge and culture, of individual and collective identity. And therefore, to effectively respond to the issue of neglect, First Nation communities can use cultural activities in the territory to in their preventive services. So offering retreats on the land or things like that. I think the important aspect is that this must also be part of the complete service and trajectory of frontline services and second line services that support families. It's found that one of the key factors in facilitating collaborative work and strengthening preventive services is having preventive services and youth protection managed jointly. So we're starting to see that here in Quebec, and First Nations have begun to modify their services to make culturally safe approaches, drawing on approaches of ancestors and taking into considering social determinants of health. So we want to make sure that communities should factor in strength and empowerment approaches based on trauma-informed interventions. And if we look at the commission's report, there's many recommendations for the government of Quebec and Canada, such as the implementation of the United Declarations of the Rights of Indigenous People, and, for example, integrating the history of colonization in residential school into education curriculum, amongst many other recommendations, because it's unfortunate that most people that are not First Nation in Quebec have no ideas what residential schools are.
Yeah, like I find that too when I go to Quebec is that, you know, I think we can say in different parts of the country, definitely a need across the nation for more detailed discussions, not only on residential schools, but the whole colonial regime, past and present. But in Quebec, I just find it, you know, a lot of people are really struggling to access material because they aren't getting that education in the classroom. And, you know, what you're pointing to in terms of the cultural base and the need to take a holistic approach and the need to make sure we're all working together in community too, right?
Yeah.
Because this divide and rule thing by Canada is part of the colonial toolkit where we get, you know, misunderstandings amongst ourselves, which gets in the way of us working together holistically for kids. So we got to avoid all of that. This report sounds really interesting. Is that something that's available on your website for people?
Yeah, it's available on our website in both English and French.
Perfect. Now, what about addictions? This has been a challenge we've been hearing across the country, the fentanyl crisis facing too many communities. It is one of the factors that drives First Nations children into care at overrepresented rates. In this holistic model, is creating more culturally based and family based addictions responses part of that?
There are some programs that have been created that works with parents that deal with addiction in how they interact with their children. So how to reduce issues with addiction, but also how to interact with their children. I'd have to look up the name. I'm sorry. I don't
know. That's no problem. I just sprang this question on her.
Yeah. I know it exists, but I can't remember the name. I believe they did a trial in Abidjan, and the response of the parents was quite good. It's a program that's offered to all communities. But as always, prevention-based services are voluntary only. So people have to be willing to participate.
Yeah, and that's why the coordination with protection is really important. Because my experience, I worked on the front lines there for about over 15 years. And I found that sometimes the most traumatized families just aren't at a place where they can acknowledge that there's a problem and reach out for that support, but we still have to be there for those people. And if they're not willing to voluntarily come to those services, then we have to find other pathways to provide that support at a community level, but also with the folks who work in that protection basket and with other allied community members as well. So it's a very important point. So one of the things that, you know, the commission has really been playing a leadership role when it comes to prevention services in recent years. Can you talk about some of the resources beyond, we've talked about a few of them now, but Is there, for instance, the frontline preventative services framework? I think that that would be really interesting for folks to know more about.
So in 2019, the commission worked directly with all the health and social services director of the First Nation communities across Quebec to develop this framework. It's a preventive framework developed, again, by and for First Nations in Quebec. So its overall aim is to guide communities in the development of their action plans concerning prevention services, with the latitude to be developed according to their actual needs and realities. More specifically, we have three objectives from this framework. The first one is to ensure the well-being of children, families, and communities by promoting the accessibility to frontline preventive services that aim to provide, and here's the emphasis, a safe, adequate environment conducive to a healthy development. The second objective is to offer high-quality frontline services based on practices that are respectful to First Nation culture. And finally, the third objective is to mobilize and empower individual families and the communities themselves in the deployment of these services and to ensure effective communication and cooperation between all partners. So that's where we come back to the concept of breaking those silos and getting all the different sectors in together to make sure that the continuum of services is adequate to serve the population.
And is that a resource is available on your website again?
Again.
That people have to go and check it out. And do you happen to know off the top of your head what the website is, address?
I think it's in French, so it's going to be cssspnql.com.
All right. So everybody go to that website. Honestly, I go there. It is full of rich resources. And a big thank you from people like me who go onto the website for generously making your resources available and accessible to all of us. You know, one of the challenges we're hearing from First Nations and agencies who are getting prevention money is workforce challenges in being able to recruit and retain qualified staff, particularly Indigenous staff who can do this important work. Has that been an experience in Quebec? And were there some recommendations or solutions that have been pointed to in these various reports that you'd like to share with us?
Unfortunately, it's also an issue here in Quebec. Many communities are having a hard time to find personnel or personnel that can stay. It's a recurring issue, and I would say, surprisingly, not just remote communities, but also communities that are very close to city centers. So there are not that many recommendations. A lot of them is how to interact with personnel. And we try and emphasize right now that with the capital assets funding, it is possible to build to be able to house personnel. So we try and emphasize that mainly because we all know that housing on community can be difficult. So right now it's a possibility to build. That's what we are offering our communities. And oftentimes that may help them to retain personnel because at least the personnel has somewhere safe and not too far to live.
Yeah. And just for all of our listeners, the order from the Tribunal on Capital is 2022 CHRT 41. And it does include that important provision about housing for staff to be able to do this important work. Another program that I'm excited about is the Mi'kmaq Maliseet Bachelor of Social Work program that's been going on, I think, for over 30 years, that has cohorts of First Nations and Métis and Inuit students who graduate from this program that's embedded in Mi'kmaq and Maliseet cultures and traditions and realities. So if you want to look at one of those programs, there is something to look at. But I agree, it's a big thing. And it's not enough to just transfer money. We have to make sure people are set up for success, right? Instead of having the money and then you're not able to kind of really translate that into services that are really going to get at that piece you're talking about, which is that safety, the cultural well-being, the identity, and growing up in an environment where you've got permanency and nurturing and all those good things that we want. So I'm going to kind of wrap up with one big question, and that is, you know, we do have First Nations at all different starting points, you know, doing a bit of prevention. Some have been doing a lot, like some of the nations in Quebec, and others are just starting off the ground. So What would be your three biggest tips for people to keep in mind in doing prevention services?
We had to work hard to be able to fit it in three. There's so many tips. I think the first thing that we have to acknowledge is, I've mentioned before, every nation, every community is unique. They possess their own tradition and particularities. And the following points can be taken as something to reflect upon, but can't be generalized as the solution for all things. So if we go ahead, I think number one would be to focus on an improved approach centered on prevention and staying current. So capacity building is important. It's also detrimental to change the services offered. As the community evolves, we can't offer the same services all the time. To value assessing not only the community, but also the outcome of the programs, the activities, the initiatives that are put into place. Too often, we forget that last phase of making sure that what we are putting into place has the results that we want. So creating evaluation mechanisms that will be used to assess the effectiveness of the prevention services. And so we can act quickly if we see that there's a need to make sure that frontline services are comprehensive, integrated, needs-based, and of course, culturally sensitive. My second aspect would be to put focus on community. So it's quite simple. No one is better placed than First Nation communities to determine what they need. It's necessary, we've mentioned so many times, to consult the population, to keep them up to date also, to mobilize them and make sure they're involved in the process. Because often we might have outsider gaze and we don't necessarily see what is hitting underneath. So having those open policies and open conversations with the population is super important. And finally, I think the third aspect would be to put a lot of importance on collaboration and partnership. So it's crucial to create partnerships that are strong and meaningful to facilitate the service continuum within the various sectors internally, but also with services that are external to the community. Unfortunately, we can't have at the moment all services within the community, and often we have to go off community to get services. So we want to ensure that those services are also culturally safe, and we want to establish objective with these partnerships that will help to navigate between services and highlight any gaps that still exist and need to be filled. I think everything is about empowering the children, the parents, the families, and the communities. We need to include and empower everyone and utilize traditional knowledge and culturally safe approaches to reach those goals.
Yeah. And, you know, this idea of collaborating is so important. That's our job as adults, right? Is to figure it out so that we can look after kids in a respectful and honorable way. And that we look at the whole family and we target those issues that drive kids into care. I have kind of a running re-recording of this. It's poverty, the poor housing, the mental health issues flowing from colonial trauma that is still ongoing, the addictions issues that result from that trauma, domestic violence, and I would add the ongoing inequalities in services for First Nations children. Those all make a situation where it's likely that families will struggle. And the solutions you're pointing to, I think, are really practical, especially because they're right there. They're available free of charge. People don't have to go and spend lots of money to be able to do it. You're just generously sharing your expertise, which is also in line with some of the best traditions of First Nations folks. So before I wind up, is there anything else you'd like to share with us that we didn't ask you about that you think is important for folks to know?
No, I think it's mentioned. I mean, the form made by First Nation for First Nation is, I think, the most important point to empower the communities and empower the people that are there. And I think listening and being open to solutions that the community can offer is often something that has to be emphasized. And we have to educate people outside of the communities so that the well-being of children on communities can get better, because that's the reality that unfortunately we live in.
Yeah. And I just, one of the things I think is so important is looking at it from a governance perspective after you've done your community consultation, ongoing community, then you ensure that you have the appropriate staff. Maybe you have to create something like this Mi'kmaq Maliseet BSW program. You make sure there's things like housing, you have proper staff training, and you're judging the success of your programs. Because, I remember a great study that I just read from New Zealand, where there was an assumption that young people were getting involved in juvenile justice because of lack of cultural connection. But what it turned out to be is that these kids were fluent in their language. They were well-connected in their culture. Wasn't that at all. It was the lack of attention to the multi-generational trauma and mental wellness issues in the families that were getting in the way. So we can't just work on assumption. We have to hold ourselves accountable about the evaluation piece. And that's not a one-shot deal. That's an ongoing process, just like the community consultation. I have found this so valuable for me. And I really want to thank you for sharing your time with us. And I hope that we can have you back, because I'd like to hear the other tips on your list.
I'd love to. It was a pleasure to be here with you guys.
Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Spirit Bear's Ask an Expert podcast. Be sure to tune in for more episodes coming up, where we'll do this all again and find out what works for kids. And of course, you can find us on Twitter at Caring Society, or visit our website, fncaringsociety.com, where you can get all kinds of information about this topic and our future episodes.